open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this. Sometimes you gotta stay in, and you know where I live. Yeah, you know what we is.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Three, J.R. Smith.
I like that open.
That's what I'm going with today. And here's why. In honor of our listener, I believe his name is Jeff Gregg from Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. He wrote me a letter.
Okay.
Said, "Dear Nathan, first of all, I want to tell you that I listen to CBD regular. It's a very good show."
Thank you so much for that.
Yes, thank you. "The reason I am writing you is to ask you to find a better way to open the program than hello there. You sound just like the Kingfish in the old Amos and Andy show when he greeted Andy. Hello there, Andy. It has racial undertones. Respectfully, Jeff Gregg, go Brown." So I don't know if I'm going to kill hello there for forever. But
today,
for today, for that. Because he took the time to write me a letter.
In honor of an NBA record?
Yes.
25 three-pointers last night?
I will go with three!
Swish!
JR Smooth. And by the way, and we'll talk about the Browns. Obviously, throughout the show, but
obviously throughout the show, we'll talk about the Browns next for the next hour and 45 minutes.
But that game last night, that performance, unbelievable. It was when Reggie Miller said it's like watching NBA 2K16. It was like watching a video game. It was so fun to watch, and the crowd reaction to everything was phenomenal. And I'll say I had absolutely no problem with them going for the record.
No.
I had absolutely no problem with what Charles Barkley said either, because what he was saying is...
Wait, are you talking about him asking for the Pope and Joel Osteen to show up in Atlanta for game three?
That was funny.
Okay.
But no, just that, like, the Hawks, show a little pride.
And Reggie Miller said the same thing.
Show a little pride.
If you don't like them shooting the threes the way they are,
stop them. Absolutely.
And I think, personally, hold on. Dante Jones broke the record.
Which Reggie Miller called, by the way.
Which Reggie Miller did call. And Mo Williams hit a 27-footer to make it 25.
After he chucked like
And Mo Williams six. Has... Well, those are his first minutes, I believe, of the entire series.
Oh, you knew he couldn't wait to get in there and chuck a three. I had no problem with it. I think you're that close to an NBA record. Go for it. What's the difference? And if you're the Hawks, I would have tried to do whatever I could to not let them shoot three.
Foul. You want
to
go in, shoot three? You get free three throws.
You want to go in there and drive in and shoot layups all day? Have fun. I don't want to see you shoot any threes. But at the same time,
Who had a problem with us going for the record?
Nobody. Barkley really wasn't saying he had a problem with the record. He's just like saying that you were. No, none of them did. He's just saying you were disrespecting him. And Shaq agreed. Like, you got it. When Mo Williams pulls up for his 6-3. Make sure he ends up on the ground. That's all you need to do. Just like show a little something.
Yeah.
Because they show nothing. And, well, the Cavs are disrespecting you. Well, yeah, you don't look like a competitive team. They've beaten you. They swept you in the playoffs the year before. They swept you in the regular season. It's 10 straight wins. Why would they respect them?
Do something about it.
Yeah. I didn't mind any of it. Oakley took offense to Charles Barkley's
comments. I would love to have, and it looks like it might happen, and I know game two is tonight, the Heat Raptors. I hope the Heat Raptors go 7. And the the Cavs sweep the Hawks, and we get another week off to rest. Because so far in game one and game two, the way the Cavaliers have played, I'll say this. First game, fourth quarter, dominant. Physically dominant. When the game was kind of teeter-tottering, right? And the Hawks were still in it after being up 17 earlier in the game. Yesterday, what it felt the threes were great, and I mean that's the icing on the cake. They're not going to do that again on their run to a championship. Okay.
Yes, most likely.
So I mean, but I love being in that 12 to 15 three-pointer range because I think that's where we win a lot of football games. But what I felt in watching that game yesterday, and it might have been a little bit of the submission of the Atlanta Hawks, was angry, physical LeBron has trickled into angry, physical, cocky, arrogant, swagger-filled Cavalier teammates.
I love
the way down to Matthew Dellavedova, who's already got, you know, the dirty player. But it's they're all understanding their role. They're all playing their role. And I think finally, and we can almost kind of say the 82-game regular season was like a full-on teaser for all of us Cavs fans to doubt LeBron James and this team, because I think they're moving the basketball a la the Golden State Warriors so much better than they have even come close to in the regular season. You saw it in flashes, maybe a quarter of ball movement. We're getting full games of ball movement that really never have a game in doubt.
And what I love is that when you have that ball movement, you allow your role players, Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye, JR, in
10 players hit a three,
is a role player on this team, to just get those good looks. And by the way, speaking of JR,
JR's comments after the game,
phenomenal. They tell me to shoot it, and I think I'm open a lot, so I shoot it. He is akin to the late great Kirby Puckett. You remember Vlad Guerrero, the best bad ball hitters?
Yes.
He is the best bad shot shooter I have ever seen. And in fact, if you said to me, would you rather have for the NBA Finals on the line, JR taking a step back 28-footer with like dudes in his grill, or a wide open, nobody near him three, I'd much rather have him taking that contested three.
And just watching the broadcast last night, you have a top 5 3-point shooter of all time in Reggie Miller, enamored with JR's ability to not even see the rim and like throw it in from 27 feet.
The one where he kind of was sprinting across the court, caught
with
it going
body
left and his body. Sick.
I can't do that from 8 feet.
Oh, you could do it.
No,
but that was stupid.
Not consistently.
No. And I don't know that he could. I think he could do it consistently. That's what he does. It was great because also Kevin Harlan was trying to sell like why you should keep watching this game, and it was the record breaking of the 3-point shot, and the crowd was chanting one more three. They were into it every time the Cavs just hoisted one up. It turned into a joke, and that's why Charles Barkley was saying that you Hawks allowed this to turn into a joke.
And shame on you.
Shame on you.
Not shame on us.
He's like, even if I was a scrub, I'd be out there taking people out. I mean, Chris Humphreys. It was so funny. I'm like, was that the guy that married the Kardashian?
Seriously.
How long ago was that? It seemed like eight lifetimes ago.
Two guys got subbed in for the Atlanta Hawks.
I first guessed Chloe, too, by the way.
I know free agency affects basketball probably to the same extent that it does the NFL. And the NFL, there's just more players that change uniforms on a yearly basis. But I'm like, when Atlanta like subbed in their, you know, mop up duty guys, I'm like, Chris Humphrey plays for the Hawks now,
and Kirk Heinrich.
And then I went, Kirk Heinrich plays for the Hawks now. I'm like, what? I didn't know what was going on. I was like, you used to be a net, and you used to be a Bull.
Yeah.
What the heck happened?
Second go around with the Hawks for Kirk Heinrich. Mo Williams knocked his glasses right off of his face.
Yeah.
It was great. It was just fun.
It was good.
And I was actually watching the game with Scotty Buckeye. Scotty Buckeye, when they're up like 30 something, what are they going to have to put LeBron back in? They cut it to 29. Scottie Buckeye, relax.
When they were up 40, was Scottie Buckeye like, this is boring, I'm going to go watch 2019 recruits for Ohio State and who Urban's targeting?
You would think so, but listen to this. Scottie Buckeye, he hadn't eaten all day because he was so nervous about the game. I'm like, it's round two of the playoffs. This isn't a Buckeyes game. I said, this isn't game seven, win or go home. This isn't a Buckeye bowl game.
This is the equivalent to a week two preseason game.
It's the equivalent of when like the Buckeyes schedule, like, I don't know, whenever they play. You know, you guys always play like an Ohio team every year that has no chance of beating you.
That's the one. And this is no offense to just Scotty Buckeye. This is fans in general. And again, maybe it's because I played the game, but there is not one athlete that I would meet that would go, like, take my breath away. There's not a for example, Eric Weddle used to DVR Lakers games because he's a Laker fan. So I would always go out of my way to find out the score of the game and tell him the score of the game. But it's a regular season basketball game. And I know it was Kobe Bryant in his prime.
So you'd just be like, bro, Lakers 98, Hawks 75.
Lakers beat the Kings by 12. Kobe hit 30. and I just walk away. And he'd get so angry. But I'm not so into any sporting event. Like, maybe final pairing of any major with Spieth and Rory, or Bubba and Spieth, or Rory and Dustin Johnson. That, to me, is like must-watch TV that I have to, like, I can't miss. You know, I want to see every shot.
Bro, he came to my house at 8:30 at night. He comes in. He tears through my pantry. He's eating rice cakes because my kids like rice. He starts eating
rice cakes.
Then he makes two mac and cheeses because he asked me, do you have food? And I'm like, I can order you a Papa John's pizza.
Wait,
you
ate all that sushi yourself?
I had eaten when? The other day?
Oh, I thought it was last night.
No.
Or the other night.
Two nights ago.
Yeah. You're right.
And the last night I had some leftovers. I had made some green curry Thai shrimp. So I had some leftovers. I'm like, I have leftovers, but if you want food, I can order you Papa John's pizza. You know, Papa John's are better pizza, better ingredients, better pizza, you know. Browns 50 off. So I was like, I can get you Papa John's. You're on fire now. He's on fire. He hadn't done something for 2 years.
J.R. Swish
inspired
it. So I had to do it again. The water bottle just went in the trash again. Draft day and today. The only 2 days since I've been on Cleveland Browns Daily that I've made the shot.
So it's true. It is true in a course of 1,000 shots. So he comes over. He tears through these. Because he hasn't eaten all day. And I'm like, why haven't you eaten all day? And at first he's like, I was busy at lunch. I'm like, you were demoing golf clubs at 3 in the afternoon. I'm like, you clearly had time to eat. I don't understand. Like, why haven't you eaten? Why didn't you stop to get food? I didn't want to get. So he tears that. Then he makes two of the mac and cheese. Looks like I got mac and cheese there for my kids. So two of the mac and cheeses. He's still losing. I'm starving. I'm like, do you want me to order you pizza? Like, I'll get you a pizza right here. 2 seconds later, next thing I know, we're in the middle of a conversation. And then all of a sudden he's on his phone ordering a Philly cheesesteak sub sandwich and a salad with cheese. And at halftime, he's in his car and goes, picks up another dinner, comes back and eats it. I'm like, why didn't you just eat? I couldn't eat. I was too nervous for the game. I'm like, it's the route.
So he had about 4,000 calories.
Yeah. Like, what are you going
to
do?
9 to 11.
What are you going
to
do for game 7 of the finals when it's winter? What are you going to do? He's like, I couldn't eat. Scotty Buckeye.
Nothing affects me like that.
No, me either.
Maybe
you played in the Super
Panthers,
Bowl.
Giants.
Were you like that in the Super Bowl?
No.
Panthers, Giants, perhaps. Perhaps Panthers, Giants. So that's what we're doing. That's what we're talking about. By the way, Cavs, we'll definitely take your thoughts on the Cavs. That's obviously the biggest thing going on in this city. Hugh Jackson was there last night, got the crowd fired up. He and PJB got some airtime on TNT, which was good to see. But speaking of the Browns, there is some news here in Berea, and we'll talk about that. Also, Gary Barnage comes in at number 94 on the NFL Network's top 100 players of the year. Fantastic. Good for him, Gary Barnage. Cavs Nation tweets, by the way, Nathan, Cleveland scored 3 more threes than Day's Kurt Humphries. Chris Humphries was married to Kim Kardashian. That's a nice little tidbit there. We appreciate that one.
What's his name? Ernie at the postgame show with Chuck and them. What's his last name? Ernie.
Is it inside the NBA?
Yeah. What's his name? Ernie something.
Ernie Johnson.
Ernie Johnson.
Shaq.
Right.
Kenny
right.
The
yeah,
Jet
yeah.
Smith. And
so it evaded me. The Cavs, through 2 games against the Atlanta Hawks, have more 3-pointers made than we have 2-pointers made.
I saw that. By like, it's close. It's like
it's
40
like
to 38.
40 to 39 or something like that.
Yeah, interesting. By the way, I think this is – I don't know if I can
– But did you see like the blown – like Love blew a layup. Like guys were blowing layups. LeBron missed a layup.
Yeah.
And yet they're bombing from 3. But go ahead.
Bob,
what did you see?
I was just going to say, Brian Vaughn was talking about your comment earlier about the ball movement, and he said the only way the Cavs could have had more ball movement in this year's playoffs would be if they went commando, which I think was pretty well done.
That's true.
Pretty strong comment right there. I wish he had a mic that he could drop. I think that would be fantastic.
There, where's our mic? I'd have done it for him.
I know. Oh, man.
Oh,
that's good stuff.
I'll find it.
You'll find it. All right, so for the Browns, we'll talk a little about Big Play Gear 94. I really think, by the way, the only other guy on the Browns that has a shot, Joe Thomas, as you and I talked about. The other news here in Berea, the Browns have signed 11 undrafted, or agreed to terms, I'm sorry, with 11 undrafted free agents, 4 defensive back, 2 defensive linemen, 1 fullback, 1 linebacker, 1 kicker, 1 offensive lineman, and 1 tight end. They are Dominique Alexander, the linebacker out of Oklahoma, started 35 of his 38 games there, 290 career tackles, first team all Big 12 in 2015.
And he was, in Dane Brugler's draft guide, had a fourth or fifth round grade, was his 18th ranked linebacker.
All right. Kenya Dennis, 26 career games at Missouri, totaling 96 tackles, 18 passes defense, 2 interceptions, and a forced fumble, was a captain in his senior year. He is from the University of Missouri, a defensive back, obviously. Brad Craddock appeared in 47 career games at Maryland, 57 career field goals on 70 attempts, won the Lou Groza Award for the nation's most outstanding kicker, first team All-Big Ten and All-American in 2014. He is a free agent kicker brought in from Adelaide, Australia to compete with Travis Coons. Mike Everett, a defensive back from Sam Houston State. He had 7 interceptions in his career. J.P. Holtz, 81 career catches, 931 yards, 11 touchdowns. The captain his senior year. He was a tight end from the University of Pittsburgh. Tracy Howard, defensive back from the U. Tracy Howard, 51 career games, 22 starts at Miami. Then you've got Niall Lawrence Stample, which is a guy that I think goes high on a lot of people's lists. A defensive tackle out of Florida State. All ACC first team in 2015. I know Cam Irving was excited to see him coming in. This was a guy that was high on many lists in terms of potential undrafted free agents once the draft was completed. Again, Niall Lawrence Stample. Browns also getting Mike Matthews, great bloodline, brother of Kevin and Jake, who are both in the NFL, obviously the son of Pro Football Hall of Famer Bruce Matthews, starting center at Texas A&M, and he was a very, very, very productive college player. He'll come in and compete at the for some time there on the offensive line. Kyle Rose at West Virginia, he is a defensive lineman as well. From Ohio, Centerville, Ohio, as a matter of fact. You've got Patrick Skov, the fullback from Georgia Tech, from Guadalajara, Mexico, which is nice that his signing was announced on Cinco de Mayo. By the way, fun fact, in case anybody wants to like really try to put together a thorough bio of me, if my father, Pedro Zagura, is in Mexico or anywhere that a mariachi band is playing, his number one mariachi band request song is Guadalajara. Don't ask me why. Gets Pedro every time. And then finally, we've got A.J. Stamps from Kentucky. 123 career tackles, 13 passes defense, 5 touchdowns there at Kentucky. Another defensive back. So those are the 11 undrafted guys that the Browns have come to terms with. So you got 14 draft picks, a draft day trade acquisition in Jamar Taylor, and now 11 undrafted free agents. 26 guys coming in to this Browns organization to compete, starting with the rookie minicamp next week. All right, we'll talk about those guys. We'll take your phone calls. We can talk Cavs. We can talk Browns. At 1:30, we'll have Tom Withers. That is going to be awesome. Talking about the Browns draft, the rookies.
Cavaliers
a little bit as well. In the second hour, we'll talk, we'll take your phone calls, obviously, throughout the day, 216-578-0850. But also, I'm excited to talk to this man. James Franklin, the head coach of Penn State, is going to give us the lowdown on Carl Nassib. That's at 2:30 here today. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It is a new day. 26 new faces going to be getting to work for the Browns. 25 of them will start at the rookie minicamp as well, as you had your 14 draft picks, 11 undrafted free agents. Again, the breakdown on those guys, you can get the full list at clevelandbrowns.com, the Browns mobile app. 4 defensive backs, 2 defensive linemen, 1 fullback, 1 linebacker, 1 kicker, 1 offensive lineman, and 1 tight end. The fullback here, obviously, to push Malcolm Johnson. The kicker here to push Travis Coons. Guy was a former, Lou Groza Award winner. Lou the Toe Groza. We're on Lou Groza Boulevard.
You know what's going to be very interesting is if the Cleveland Browns do carry a fullback.
I don't think they will, but they might.
They might, but I guess Malcolm Johnson, to me, is a specialty player to begin with. We talked about Seth the Valve, being a mismatch, a specialty player. And I just feel like if you can carry an extra wide receiver, carry an extra defensive back, carry an extra offensive lineman in place of Malcolm Johnson, because if he's only participating, and again, no knock against anybody who's at a four, offensive players aren't the best special teams players to begin with. They have to be taught because they don't have those the instincts to tackle to the ground because they're an offensive player. They're tackled to the ground, right? So that's why safeties and cornerbacks and linebackers, outside linebackers, are predominantly making up the special teams units. And then if he's only playing a small percentage or he's only up in like one or two packages offensively, do you really need him? And I know some people go, well, when you get down there in the goal line, find me the refrigerator, whoever that is, to be that fullback. You know, gosh, J.J. Watt is catching touchdowns from the tight end and fullback H-back positions for the Houston Texans. Can we find that specialty player and add a roster spot that we can, you know, get depth in another direction, not carry
nothing? Well, you wonder, and last year, predominantly when they lined up with a fullback, it was one of their tight ends.
Yeah.
That could be Randall Telfer. He's got the speed, the size, and he's reportedly a good blocker. So that could be something to look at there. By the way, interesting to note from this 11, again, not a single running back among them. We had heard the name Paul James out of Rutgers as being a guy that was potentially linked to the Browns, but he is not on this list of 11 guys. He was very productive at Rutgers, battled injuries, though, which is why he ultimately ended up not getting drafted. Gibbs, before we get to these phone calls, I just want to see or hear from you just about the gloriousness of last night, your take on that, and obviously, you know, what you think here about,
it was great,
about these
man.
New 11 guys.
I, you know, had a bunch of wedding stuff to do.
Yeah.
So had the game on. Really wasn't paying too much attention, was in and out, doing some other stuff. I saw the score at one point. Come in, there's like 3 minutes to go in the third quarter, and they're up by like 39. And I'm like, and honey, guess what? You can pick whatever you want to watch on TV because this beating is officially in the books.
It is. Everybody but Scotty Buckeye was confident at that point that the game was over. He's like, why is LeBron on the bench?
I will agree with Scotty Buckeye. I was a little nervous going into the game because I really.
Did you eat?
Look at me. Do I look like a man who misses meals, that worries that much?
Does this look like a man who's had all he can eat?
You're talking to a man who's been asked to leave buffets.
Oh, yes. That's a badge of honor, by the way.
I totally agree with that, by the way. It was just fun. I mean, the only thing, I watch games like that, and I just go, why didn't they play like that all year?
Because you can't. But, I mean,
Golden State did.
True.
And you know what? Can't say you can't do that.
You're not going to shoot that percentage all year.
No, but
Gibbs, the style, you're right. They could do that.
Yeah. Here's the point that every time I talk to someone who's enamored with watching the Cavs or that fan or neighbor who has to DVR the game, and I'm just like, the Cavs play today? I don't even know. I don't even watch in the regular season. And a lot of it stems from the frustration that I've developed watching the Buckeyes this past season. I know, what did they? They lost one football game, you know, to Michigan State and had an opportunity to get back to the national championship. But the frustration that came in struggling to beat Hawaii and struggling, you know, at points with Central Michigan and flip-flopping quarter. It's just like, why can't we just roll 50-14 the way it should be if we were firing on all cylinders?
Yeah.
And it's just like, watching the Cavs and say I swear, I felt like a jinx at times where they'll be up by 12, I'll turn it on, and the Bulls make a run to go up by 4. And I'm just like, click, turn it off.
Yep, I'm right there.
It's the most
you.
Frustrating thing in the entire world. Like, why can't our big three go off? I really do believe that the Warriors, why are the Warriors able to beat a team by 25 every night and the Cavs are winning by 6? That's frustrating to me.
Yep.
If we're all that good and potentially need to be that great to beat the Warriors in the West.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I mean, that's the only thing. But literally, going back to what you guys were talking about earlier, I could care less about this series. Like, our own Matt Fontana last night was stressing yesterday afternoon. He goes, I got to get tickets. I got to find tickets, cheapest tickets I can find or X amount. I'm like, why are you caring about going to a second round game?
Save up and try to get one seat to the finals.
And that's horrible. That's how spoiled we become as Cleveland fans, Cavalier fans, because we expect nothing less.
Right.
And the second round means nothing.
Nothing.
Eastern Conference Finals, now I'm interested.
Only bad
NBA
things can
finals,
happen.
I'm all in. First and second round, I don't care.
Only bad things can happen. And by the way, the Browns were there in full force last night. Hugh Jackson got on the microphone, got the crowd going. RG3 took the quarterbacks, Josh McCown, Pep Hamilton, Austin Davis, some other coaches there as well. Joe Hayden was there. Joe Thomas was there. Joe Schobert, Joe the Show, talked, tweeting out about it. So certainly a lot of interest from the Browns there about what their team's doing. You know what I love? You know, guys that we obviously, you know, got to know and be friends with. It was great to see last night on Twitter, you know, Craig Robertson, Gip, Travis Benjamin, still like getting fired up for the city of Cleveland and the Cavs.
You have to. I don't think they would do that for any old city, I guess you could say. There's something about Cleveland that is truly special because of the grind, you know, the blue-collar mentality, and them wanting to see something great happen here, even though it hasn't didn't quite happen to their liking in a Browns uniform.
Yeah. They still got the love for the land, man. The love for the land. And some of our new guys are already excited about the land. Let's get one call in here quickly, then we'll get Tom Withers on the phone. John, and actually, let's go Pablo in Brazil, and then we'll go John Acker quickly. Pablo.
Hey, man, it's me again.
How you doing, brother?
I'm fine, man. Good to talk to you again. This not last time I called you was because we were getting rid of Manziel.
Yep.
Now... and it was a good start, but seeing all these draft class, I'm very anxious about that. Very, very, it's a kind of very positive feeling that you should keep doing that, Nathan, because it's what's bringing us to cheer about the Browns.
That's right. We'll keep the positivity coming. I am excited to see these young guys come in here and certainly get to work. That is going to be very exciting starting next weekend with the rookie mini camp. And that's Saturday for those of you who are in the United States of America. Or Pablo, hop on a plane from Brazil. Come up here for Fan Fest. We're going to have lots of great panels, alumni, current players, and an actual rookie mini camp practice at First Energy Stadium during that Saturday, May the 14th. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really want to go there. I'm trying to see if I can find some tickets, a little bit on a cheaper fare to go.
Good. Well, if you come, Pablo, you let us know, and we'll make sure we give you a warm welcome. Pablo, thanks for being with us. John in Akron, quickly. What's up, John?
Listen, great show, great things that the Browns are doing. I'm a new season ticket holder for the Browns this year. So
thank you, man. Congratulations.
But here's the big question. I was there last night at that game. I'm a Cavs season ticket holder. If the Cavs go 16-0 in the playoffs, who gets remembered more, the Golden State Warriors this year or the Cleveland Cavaliers for sweeping the playoffs? Let's hear your response from that guy. Thanks a lot.
Definitely.
Sweep the playoffs.
Sweep in the playoffs. Yes. Absolutely.
You don't get anything.
Especially because that means they will have swept either the Warriors or the Warriors had gotten knocked out and didn't even make it to the finals. So, yes.
Afterthought.
Absolutely in that one. It would be the Cavaliers. All right, let's go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline right now and welcome in Tom Withers from the Associated Press. Tom, good to be with you.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Before we get into the big news of the 11 undrafted free agents who have agreed to terms with the Browns, let's talk about the Cavs for a second and what they did last night in one of the remarkable shooting, scoring, butt-kicking performances of all time.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. It was... God, I'm not sure if I could make 25 threes alone in a gym in an afternoon. So
I believe in you, Tom.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding, but it was like the county fair. They stepped up to the arcade and just started knocking down the milk pins, didn't they? I mean, it was incredible. You know, from the outset, and the crazy thing too, guys, that 25 threes, and I'm not sure how many of them even hit the rim. I mean, they were all absolutely bottom of the basket, and this is what. I hate to be game planning against the Cavs right now because, what are you going to do? Are you going to pack the paint and let them shoot and they do what they do? Or are you going to extend your defense and come outside and then have LeBron beat you off the dribble or Kyrie beat you off the dribble and, facilitate and find open guys? So they were really clicking on all cylinders last night. I kind of just sounded foolish, I think, a little bit on the radio pregame yesterday when I said that this team is too dependent on its three-point shooting. But when you're making them like that, at that kind of a rate, I mean, you're unbeatable.
And, Tom, the one thing that stood out to me, well beyond just – I mean, as remarkable it was to hit the 25 threes, the one thing that I said in the open of the show today is I feel like the mentality that LeBron has now taken on, and I think it came probably in that week of rest in preparation for the Atlanta Hawks, which they thought would be giving them a better test. It's kind of – trickle down into the rest of the roster, the toughness, the swagger, that this team is kind of peaking at the right time. And it almost seems, as we all kind of thought, the 82-game regular season was really just a warm-up for them.
You're exactly right. I'll tell you what, Matt, it's a great point. You know, this is how they started to look, if you guys recall, last year in that Boston series before Kevin Love went down. I mean, this is what was beginning to happen with a team that had just been put together and really didn't have any playoff experience together. Well, now they figured it out, and now LeBron not only has confidence in his other guys, he trusts in them, and you're right, the way he's carrying himself right now, I mean, he knows that this team has a legitimate chance to get it done this year. I mean, some things are still going to have to go their way. They're still going to be tested at some point. You know, there's going to come a game, much like game one of this series, where, you know, things aren't going well. The shots aren't going down. You're in a tie game with 3 minutes to go, and you got to buckle down. But to your point, I mean, they are incredibly locked in, and it all begins with him. It all begins and always ends with him.
With the King, talk with Tom Withers from the Associated Press. Tom, I made, as a man who knows every sport well, I call J.R. Smith, like, kind of reminded me of Kirby Puckett or Vlad Guerrero, who are the best bad ball hitters maybe in the history of baseball. He is the best bad shot shooter I have ever seen. And, in fact, I'd rather have him take those because they're actually not bad shots for him than a wide open three. He's better with a guy on his face fading away from 28 feet.
He is absolutely incredible. He is that kid that you play on the schoolyard where, you know, you have, he doesn't even look at the rim. He spins on one leg and throws it up and it goes in and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, it was interesting. I was sitting on the court doing a radio interview before last night's game and JR came walking by, picked up the ball right near half court. He's got on his, you know, headphones and his sweats and he just drains a half quarter, half court shot as if it was like a 10 footer. And walked off. And at the time, I didn't really think about it. And then later, I was like, the guy just couldn't miss. And if you watch him during practice or even pregame warmups, I mean, he shoots underhanded shots from midcourt. He tries every kind of angle you can imagine, and they all go in. I mean, the thing, though, that I think is being overlooked with JR is the incredible job he's done defensively.
Absolutely.
On Kyle Korver. In the first two games, he's been locked down. And in fact, after the game last night, he talked about, you know, describing it like being Deion Sanders and taking away one half of the field. So, they're just, again, they're clicking at both ends right now, and it's really fun to watch.
And, Tom, after a night like last night, they'll have a day rest, and they'll go down to Atlanta. Do you expect them to drop a game in Atlanta as hot as they're running right now?
You know, I did prior to last night, I'll be honest with you.
I thought so, too.
I was kind of in the minority, to be honest. Everybody's talking about 4 and 5 games. I kept thinking that this Hawks team was a little bit better. And I thought in game one that they really missed their chance there by kind of collapsing down the stretch. But I still think they can take one of the two. Initially, I thought what would happen would be the Hawks would take game three, and then they would really push the Cavs hard in a game four that would come down to the wire. I don't see that scenario now. I think they're so – now, I could be totally wrong, and this might be a misread on their body language, et cetera. They seemed so demoralized last night in leaving that arena, and why wouldn't you be? When a team embarrasses you that by 40 points like that. Here's the other thing, though. And you guys have been in games where sometimes it's easy to let a game go when it's happening like that, and by the end of the third quarter, you're like, you know what, it's just not our night, and let it go. I didn't get that sense with the Hawks last night as they were leaving the building. This one really hurt, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how they come out tomorrow night in the first 10 minutes. I tell you what, it's going to be hard to get their crowd up, isn't it? I mean, you know, you're going to the game tomorrow, and I'm thinking, okay, what are the Cavs going to do to us tonight? So I think the first, like I said, I think the first 8 to 10 minutes tomorrow night are going to be really revealing.
Yeah, and even more so, I would think if I were the Hawks or the Hawks fan, they really feel like they have to play close to perfect.
Perfect.
Down
2-0 exactly.
Already, you know, at their home, that if they drop one, if they drop game three at home, game four, their mentality is not, they're not going to win four in a row.
Exactly.
So their mentality
right.
has really got to change.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think some golf reservations are already being made, to be honest.
Talking with Tom Withers from the Associated Press out here on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. Tom, let's talk Browns for a second now. Your thoughts on this draft, one that initially they were going to go into with 10 picks. Instead, they end up drafting 14 players, trading for a 15th, and also have a future one and two future twos coming out of it when it was all said and done.
Yeah, there was like a barrage of three-pointers going on by the Browns last weekend, wasn't there?
Yeah.
So it was busy. There was wheeling and dealing. you know, let's be honest, the draft really started for the Browns back on April 20th when they made the deal with Philadelphia that kind of set the table for everything to go down. I thought it was a very astute draft by this front office. I didn't see any panic moves. I think we can see that there are a couple of reaches here and there on guys that we weren't sure were going to be drafted as high as the Browns ended up taking them. But I thought it was a smart draft. I thought they addressed some obvious needs. They took a quarterback, which we're happy about, and I think they also addressed the biggest need in my mind, which was wide receiver. Yep. Nathan, and I know you feel the same way, and I think in getting four of them and then kind of a hybrid tight end in the kid from Princeton, that they did a nice job. Yep. They also addressed the pass rush. So, again, I didn't see any panic moves, and I think it was just a real, well-thought-out plan.
Nathan and I both feel, and I'll ask you this question, that both Corey Coleman and Emmanuel Ogbah, they both met a significant need for the Cleveland Browns. We'll also probably, to us at this point right now, because of where they're drafted, make the biggest impact. But beyond those two players, the other 12, who do you think one or two players that you could think as a rookie will have an impact for the Cleveland Browns?
I think Sean Coleman's got a chance. I think he, you know, considering the situation on the offensive line right now, I think he could come in right away and have an impact. And, you know, and the kid that stood out to me is this Derek Kindred from Texas Christian, who is the kid that played with the broken collarbone last year. Those are the guys that jump out to me. I think the later round guys, I think we can find a couple of special teamers here and there. And I tell you, the other guy that I've heard a lot about from people over the last few days is Drango, the kid he took in the fifth round, the offensive lineman from Baylor. So I think, you know, obviously you hope to get two to three, maybe four starters out of this group, but I think all of them are going to have an impact at some level. And the other thing, and I don't have to tell you this, Matt, I mean, more than anything else, it brings in competition into camp. And there's more bodies out there, and, you know, volume is going to, you know, hopefully breed some success, and you're going to find a couple of diamonds in the rough here. But I think, you know, by and large, it's a very solid draft class.
Tom, when you look at this class, let's talk about the receivers for a second. You know, a lot of people high on Hollywood Higgins, who was actually the fourth of the four that the Browns drafted. Peyton, all-time receiving leader at UCLA. Lewis has that size and speed combination you just can't coach or teach. When you look at those guys, what are the chances in your mind that all four make this roster, and who should be nervous in the current wide receiver room?
Yeah, I think everybody's got to be nervous when you have a regime and a coaching change. I think everybody is put on notice, aren't they? I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, you've got new eyes, clean slates, all that stuff. So, you know, I like everything about this receiving group. I see some size. I see some speed. There's a couple guys that I've heard have some questionable hands, but, you know, that's what happens when you come into the NFL. You got to kind of relearn that skill as well, just because things are moving faster and there's bigger guys out there to battle with. So I think all these guys could have an impact, and it wouldn't shock me, Nathan, if they all make the roster.
It wouldn't surprise me either. And you know, those guys that are currently there, it's tough to see who might end up making it, and they're going to have to compete their butts off to stay here. And on the defensive side of the ball, you add, you know, a bunch of pass rushers, Ogbah, Nassib, yeah, Schobert, Scooby Wright even late in the draft. What do you see from that side of it? Who do you kind of think is on the bubble maybe in that outside linebacker room?
Yeah, you know, I'd hate to single out anybody. That's not my call. I don't know what the coaches are looking at specifically in terms of how this scheme is going to work and who fits it best. But I tell you, the kid, too, that I've heard a lot about, and this whole class, and, you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about it this week. You know, one of the themes here, too, is kind of these underdog overachievers that they seem to find. You know, guys with great backstories. And, you know, one of the interesting ones to me is this Schobert kid, you know, a walk-on, yep, at Wisconsin, who not only walked on, but then, you know, became basically a three-year starter and a captain and all Big Ten and right down the line. And from what I've seen, he's got a nice blend of kind of inside and outside skills. So, you know, a guy, if I was a linebackers coach, I couldn't wait to get my hands on. So I think it's a really good group. I think there's impactful players on both sides of the ball.
And Tom, I'll ask you for a grade, you know, outside looking in on this class before they even, all get here to Berea, before they even take the field for the rookie minicamp, as analysts do. Overall, do you think this is very positive? And what grade would you give the Cleveland Browns as a stepping stone towards the future?
You know, I'm a kind of a tough grader, so I don't hand out my A's very often. So I'll give them a very solid B plus and say that they nice. Got an 88. I got an 88 on their first test. The thing that really got me didn't send me into a negative tailspin at all. But the trade of the number two pick was something that I was very strongly against, only because of what we've dealt with here for the last 17 years, and that's the idea that we haven't been able to find, the Browns have not been able to find a franchise quarterback. And to me, when you finally have that opportunity to get that guy, whether he's number one or number two, you roll the dice and you go for that there. Now, in saying that, you know, I was forgetting about Hugh Jackson and how he feels about quarterbacks and his track record with quarterbacks, which is, you know, spotless, not, you know, very good. And so I was a little bit tainted going to the draft to begin with. So I think it's a very solid draft. Like I said, a strong B plus. And if you bring an apple to the teacher, you might get an A minus out of me.
Well, you talked about the quarterbacks there. And I think, you know, clearly once the Browns knew Goff was off the board,
right,
it seemed like Goff was their guy. Mike Silver has basically written an article where he came out and said Hugh Jackson was planning to build his franchise around Jared Goff. Once he was gone,
Yeah. They
weren't nearly as high on Carson Wentz, so they wanted to get out. But what did you think about him coming out and saying, look, Cody Kessler, trust me, this is my guy. This is the guy that I've identified as not being maybe the best quarterback in everybody else's eyes, but he's the best quarterback for what I want to do with the Cleveland Browns.
Now, here's my question, though. If Goff was your guy, then why didn't you go get him? You had the ammunition.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if they thought it was really that likely. I mean, obviously you had to think it was, because why would Tennessee stay there for an offensive lineman?
Right. But if you had the number two pick, I mean, you've already got ammo, and you certainly have enough, you know, enough else in your arsenal to be able to pull that move off and move up one spot. So yeah,
I don't know.
I'm not sure if I'm buying that as the ending argument as to how, you know, what their thought process was going in. But I'm sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought. What were we on?
We were just talking about him coming out and saying, trust me, Cody Kessler
is my guy. Cody Kessler, Hey, look, obviously they had some kind of a connection, Kessler and Jackson did, when, you know, during their meetings and the visits and what have you. And Kessler really came off very polished to me, not surprising. I mean, he was a four-year starter at USC. That's what they have there. But, you know, I liked that kid every time I watched him, you know, during – college football season. You know, I'm not a USC fan per se, but they're on enough, and you always saw him, and he always had pretty good weapons to work with, and he seemed to have very good accuracy and poise in the pocket and all those things you're looking for. So, you know, again, when Hugh Jackson, the quarterback whisperer guru, says, trust me, I have to trust him. I mean, that's where we're at right now, and you got to hope that, you know, Kessler's going to come in here, provide some more competition for RG3. You know, I'm not buying this idea that you know, don't sleep on RG, or don't sleep on Cody Kessler because he's nipping at RG3's heels. I don't think that's the case at all. And from what I understand is that Robert Griffin has done nothing but show, you know, leadership capabilities and a real desire to make this a fresh start and make it work since he's been here. So, and in fact, I was fortunate enough to talk to him for a couple minutes yesterday, and I've been impressed with every meeting I've had with RG3 to this point. So, but I think, you know, I think Kessler's a nice guy to have in the fold, isn't he? He's another player for this coaching staff to evaluate, and can do nothing but help that room, as they like to say.
One other question I wanted to ask you about, I'm sure you've seen the comments by now that came when we interviewed Coach Jackson on the draft review show on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network about the running backs. We had 14 picks, not one of them a running back. They just released the name of 11 undrafted free agents. Again, not one of them a tailback. And he said, flat out, Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson are as exciting talents as he's seen, went way out of his way to praise what he thinks Crow can bring to the table. How surprised by that were you, and what do you think that means for the future of this team at the running back spot?
I think it bodes well. I think we've all been impressed with Crowell at times. I think there were a lot of us that were clamoring for him to get the ball more than he did last year and even the season before. You know, Crow did have some problems in my mind, though, of maybe not hitting the hole when he needed to, especially in the red zone. I thought there were some goal line situations. where Crow maybe could have done a better job of getting the ball across the line. So, and hey, I've been a Duke Johnson guy since the moment they got him. And I felt like last year he was kind of
underused at times, and that offensive scheme, they really didn't figure out how to best use Duke, you know, whether it was, you know, flaring him out of the backfield with some swing passes and things like that. But, you know, hey, Hugh Jackson's an offensive mind. He knows offensive talent. So, again, we've got nothing else to do but trust him at this point. And if that's his evaluation of Crowell and Johnson, well, you know, we'll find out sooner than later.
Yes, we will. And he was in the house last night, speaking of Hugh Jackson, for that big Cavs win. And
yeah,
hopefully the mojo can go both ways and we can all kind of heat up here in the city of Cleveland.
Sounds good. Yeah, there were about a half dozen or more Browns down there last night. So, yeah, it's good to see. It's always nice to see, you know, guys from the other teams getting out and supporting the other pro teams here in town.
Absolutely. And last night certainly was a special one. Follow him on Twitter at TWithersAP. Tom, thank you so much for being with us.
Gentlemen, anytime. Take care.
Thanks, Tom.
You got it. All right. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines 216-578-0850 here on CBD. We can talk Cavs. We can always talk the 11 undrafted free agents, anything Browns as well. And also we'll get into Cinco de Mayo. I feel right now that this year's Cinco de Mayo is not getting the attention that it deserves. And I'm not happy about it. Bitmoji has had every holiday they come out with a pack for the holiday. Where's my why can't I get my guy in a sombrero on Cinco de Mayo? Where is it? Where are you at right now, Bitmoji, on this? I mean, I feel like it's being ignored.
Tweet people, at Bitmoji.
People that I'm counting on to have – oh, they threw one in there that says Happy Cinco de Mayo. That's not enough. Where's the sombrero? People I'm counting on to go party, the Big Daddy DJ Audacity, Scotty Monaco, if you will, it's as if they don't even know it's Cinco de Mayo. Let's go. I want to go to Barrio. I want to go to Barrio again. I want to go to Barrio a third time. I want to go to Taco Bell. I want to go to Senorita Bonita's. I want to hit them all up. I want tequila. I want tacos. I want burritos. I want fajitas. I want it all.
All in one day?
Yes.
So this show's getting in your way.
I had a phenomenal week in Mexico. This is like my time to get back. Yes, as a matter of fact, it is. If we were going to start day drinking, lunch could have been tacos. There was no even acknowledgement down in the cafe today.
I had to ask for an avocado.
To try to make it. They're all little, yeah.
Get my healthy fats, but yeah, to give me a little taste of something Mexican.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to complain. It was a phenomenal lunch today.
It was.
Let nobody make any mistakes about that. However, where's the love for Cinco? Gibbs, are you excited?
For Cinco de Mayo?
Yeah.
I love Cinco de Mayo. I don't know if I'm going to be celebrating it today, though.
That's what I'm saying.
What is going on?
Cinco de Mayo crushes St. Patrick's Day.
You know what it
Day.
Seems like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is like life is getting in the way
yes.
of celebrations.
Yes.
Ugh, I hate it when that happens.
Right?
I mean, yeah, this is the perfect the universe is coming together. This is on a Thursday night.
Wonderful. Yeah. Like,
may the 4th be with you.
You're going to be hungover on Friday all day. It's Friday. You're going into the weekend. What does it matter?
Check.
And I'm like, I'm not sure if we're doing anything. I got to work till 7:30. I don't know.
By the way, I was asked on Twitter, and this is what I want you two to think about, my favorite tequila. What is your favorite tequila? We'll talk about that and much more.
I got
much
a
more.
Better question.
Okay,
margarita
what?
Or Mexican beer on a day like today?
Oh, dude, go to a Mexican restaurant, get a margarita, and they pour those little baby Coronas into your
that
margarita.
Oh, God, that's a nice Coronita.
Yes.
Yeah. Whatever it's called.
That's a baby Corona.
Yeah, give me
Coronita.
One of those.
Yeah. I am just going to say, I'm going to say the answer is no to your question, Gibbs. Neither. I want straight tequila on the rocks, couple slices of fresh jalapeno, a squozen lime, and let's go.
Pass.
Yeah.
That jalapeno margarita at Barrio almost ruined my meal.
Yeah, but that's got all the extra. See, when I don't need the sugar, the mix, the sour.
I'm just saying. It had nothing to do with all that. That would have been fine because I'm a candy guy. The jalapeno burned my face off.
Yeah, man.
I love your jalapeno.
Erased my taste buds.
This is for where's Steven Regal's music? He's a man. He's a real man's man. Only a real man's man could throw back this tequila with the jalapenos in there. Of course. Or you could just be a Super Bowl champion, NCAA champion, and
drink
not like
you
jalapenos.
Want.
Yeah, like whatever. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. All right, gentlemen, we're going to get the phones in a second. Favorite tequila?
Ben Julio 1942.
That's mine. God, I love it.
That sounds fancy.
I have it in my basement. You drank it at my house.
Did I drink it at your house?
You may have.
Did we do shots of it?
And no, we didn't do shots.
No, then I didn't drink it.
I sipped on it like a fine wine. What about for you, Gibbs?
I'm a simple man. Give me a little 1800.
It's not that simple. It's not like 1800's legit.
I'm a big fan. I like Patron.
Uh-huh.
If you like Patron, and I like Patron for a long time, the Don Julio, just Don Julio.
Period.
Period. Their silver is better than Patron silver.
You know what other tequila I like that I've been getting is, I think it's called Ka tequila. It comes in like the skulls, K-A-H. It's pretty good. Comes in skulls too, which is nice. I think it adds to the whole thing. The best one I've ever had, something called Casa Dragon, which is supposed to be like, I don't even know how expensive, but it is retarded.
Yeah, I just know that in my trip to Punta Mita, Mexico, and this is like, again, living the life of all lives at one of the most relaxing times of my life. I've got my wife by my side after a great dinner,
yep.
And I'm in Mexico. The mariachi band is playing. I've got an expensive cigar in my mouth, and I'm drinking a sipping tequila that was over $100 a glass. And I was just like, now this is the life. And I literally have an attendant or a waiter,
a butler waiter,
you know, cutting my cigar, lighting my cigar, teaching me how to drink this expensive tequila so that I'm not the dumb American that just goes like a shot and drinks it, like how to truly enjoy it. Almost the same way when you drink a really good wine, you know, swirl it, smell it, take it
That's
in. You
stupid.
Do the same thing
just
with the tequila.
It.
Oh, whatever.
You want to savor it, Gibbs.
No.
You're not shotgunning a beer, Gibbs.
What's your favorite Mexican beer?
I can't remember the name of it. Gold Label on the top.
Sol?
No.
Pacifico. Oh, like the real gold where it looks like gold foil?
Yes.
Modelo Especial.
Thank you.
That's a fine one.
My favorite one.
That's a fine
one. My lady
one.
Is
Pacifico.
A huge,
Pacifico
huge
is good.
Fan.
So good.
So good. I mean, when I'm in Mexico, I don't know why, but in Mexico, I enjoy a good Tecate or a Sol.
I like Tecate
for me, living in San Diego, is like, maybe I'm going to get in trouble for this. It's like a little too Mexican for me.
It's good, but you're in Mexico. That's why I like it.
But I'm saying, I don't drink Tecate in Mexico. I drink it in the United States, and it's too Mexican.
I like Corona in the United States.
I love Corona. Corona Light.
Yeah.
Got to watch your figure, bro.
It's fine. Yeah. Throw a lime in there.
Yes.
Turn it upside down.
Turn it upside down.
Bring it back.
Yes.
It's ready. All right. Favorite Mexican, like if you go to a Mexican restaurant, what's the one thing that you're like, what are you typically getting? Do you have a go-to?
I've got to do the, I'm just drew a blank.
For me, it's fajitas.
Fajitas to me are too American.
I like fajitas and I like a good burrito. Like, there's nothing better than a good burrito.
I get the California burrito that's as big as a plate.
What are the ones that soft rolled up with the sauce on top?
Chimichangas?
Enchilada.
No. Enchiladas. That's what I got to have. My go-to is like the – if you get – I go 1 through 5 at a Mexican restaurant. When they have their combos, I get like a chicken and a beef enchilada with like either a crispy chicken taco or a crispy beef taco. That's my go-to.
Okay.
Double rice, no refried beans.
Oh, okay. You got to go beans.
No beans.
My good friend Chris Curran up in Chicago, the executive chef, by the way, at Fulton Market Kitchen.
Okay.
Fantastic place, I have been told. I can't wait to go back once the Browns next year are in Chicago for the preseason. He says Fortaleza tequila, Fortaleza.
I'll check it out.
They have got to check if they like tequila. He goes, your mind will be blown on that one.
I will check it out.
Can you drink it room temperature and not have the burn?
Chris is listening. Chris, let me know.
Chris, let us know. Thank you, Chris.
The other thing I will say is if anybody's going to Puerto Vallarta anytime soon, the absolute best fajitas and margaritas in the world are a place called Pee-Pee's. So there, you can remember that. Write it down. You can do it. But the other tequila I'd recommend, if you don't have fresh jalapenos, you don't have the time to infuse it yourself, Tanteo Tequila, Tanteo, makes a jalapeno one. They just do it with their own tequila. They infuse it themselves, and it is fantastic.
Yeah, I've got to convince the lady to go out tonight.
Yes,
normally it's something that we do. It's actually, she has quite a little funny day because she loves this holiday. Let me give you the background. Today is actually my anniversary to my ex-wife that I married her. Mm-hmm. We got married on Cinco de Mayo.
Okay.
So it's a running joke in our house. Like this morning, I go downstairs. Monica's already up. She's moving around. I said, hey, how are you? Everything good? She goes, yeah. She goes, hey, happy anniversary. She finds it quite funny.
You're like, yes.
I think it's pretty demented. But
you said, thank you for that.
I'm like, that's great. I'm going to start drinking now.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones. 216-578-0850. John in Louisville. John, welcome.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, gentlemen.
Thank you, amigo.
Oh, wonderful. Hey, Nathan, I'm going to get on you, and I'm going to agree with the gentleman that sent the letter.
No hello there. You don't like it. It's out.
Nah, I can't say I do. I mean, I know it comes from Seinfeld.
It doesn't. It doesn't come from anywhere.
Really? I thought it was from that episode with Jerry doing the hello there. Isn't that a Larry David line?
No, it was literally like I just wanted to say something, and that's what I started saying. And then everybody immediately when I started saying it was Seinfeld or it was this or it was that. So maybe other people have had that thought as well to say hello there. But,
it is what it is.
I just want to say something funny. It made me laugh.
I do the podcast every day. Been going back as far as, you know, Uncle Vic's been doing it. And I have to skip the first part of it because the hello there just annoys me so much. So
well, maybe, today maybe would have been a great open for you to hear. It wasn't there today. It was three J.R. Smooth.
You can't listen to the podcast because of the hello there.
Gibbs, you need to put out a Twitter poll if the hello there's got to go or not.
I feel like it's on its way out.
That's
a
tomorrow.
Letter.
Is the kid in tomorrow?
Yeah, he should be.
All right, we'll put it up tomorrow.
Should be. All right, we'll see. Let's go to Dan in Hershey, Pa. Dan.
Thank you so much for taking my call. First of all, I grew up in Nashville when I was a kid, and I'm a Vandy fan ever since. So I heard you're going to have James Franklin on the show today.
Yes,
if you could just tell him from all Vanderbilt fans, thanks for making Vanderbilt football revived and relevant again, I'd appreciate it. He did an unbelievable job.
We will do that.
And I'd like to make something of a possible long-winded comment here. I hope you'll bear with me. I think I can say some things as a focused fan that maybe people associated with the team can't say, and it has to do with the big elephant in the room, and that's the quarterback position. So in post-draft, I looked at Hugh Jackson's history. I mean, there was a point where he had Oakland 8-0 until Campbell got hurt.
With Jason Campbell, yep.
Yep, then he traded the farm for Carson Palmer, and Al Davis died, basically, you know, and it kind of all blew up on him. And then I looked at Andy Dalton, and it appeared that when he took over, Andy Dalton ascended, you know, as a quarterback. So I think personally that their draft strategy was actually formulated when they got RG3. And living here in Hershey, I'm in between Baltimore, Washington, Philadelphia markets. And RG3, I mean, when he came out, I personally thought him and Luck had Hall of Fame talent. And when you said yesterday that he beat the whole team down at the end of practice on a sprint, I thought, oh, boy, baby. So I got to tell you, I'm not only sipping the Kool-Aid now, I'm guzzling it, man. It's like,
yeah.
So I would like to get your idea on, like, what if, and there's a lot of ifs here, what if this guy, because I think that it's not whether Carson Wentz turns into a quarterback or not, or Goff in the league. I think for us, it's if RG3 pans out. So if this guy can play up to his potential, how many games do you think we can win?
All right, I will let you know what I think about RG3, his chances, and what it could mean for the Browns right after this.